Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I bring you Mythic Atlantis, but first, a legend of Hercules. Since Plato first penned his foundational works, the Timaeus and the Critias, many a tale teller has spun a fantastic yarn of long ago times and set it in ancient Atlantis. One of the most recent was a television series that explored the lost continent through the lens of Greek mythology. Epic heroes like Jason and Hercules, along with historical figures like Pythagoras, adventured in a land not unlike Minoan Crete and revisited the classical legends. Though unseen, Poseidon was an all-powerful and forever present presence. Alas, the series was not renewed for a third season, which is unfortunate, as it was leading to the voyage of the Argo, one of my foundational myths. But the two-season adventures are now immortalized on Blu-ray, DVD, and streaming. I will share my impressions of one episode as promised, episode 6 of the first season, The Song of the Sirens. Insecure about himself and his future with Medusa, Hercules seeks the help of the Colchian witch Circe. A potion he is given reveals the depth of his love for Medusa, but poisons her. Hercules confronts Circe, who turns him into a pig. Jason and Pythagoras seek the witch. She reveals herself to be Pasiphae's sister, and Jason reluctantly agrees to be the instrument of her vengeance if she restores his friends to their earlier conditions. Hercules and Medusa, alas, become estranged. And there will remain for now, to be continued on our next episode of Mythic Atlantis. And now, Curto and Phyllis and Mark Brinkerhoff will be sharing with us their knowledge of the lost continent. Greetings and welcome, Nick. Greetings and welcome, Phyllis and Mark.
Greetings.
Great to be here. Thank you. Hey. Looking forward to tonight.
Me too. When Nick said that he was scheduling you for a Mythic Atlantis episode, I knew that one episode was not enough because you're full of tales and chock full of information. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your views on Atlantis.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thank you.
So,
Mark, do you want to start off? Because I know you've got quite a lot to share with the listeners tonight.
Well, I'm going to have to say something about something. Hold on.
Are you talking about the skull?
But there was an ancient place that we called Atlan.
When you say we...
I'm sorry. Beings of the solar system. And it was about 250 million years ago. And then what happened is that became the mythic Atlantis, as it became another island. So that's the Atlantis people know as the last one that was here. But Atlan was peopled by giants. And that's where you see the ancient stuff of giant steps and things like that. That would be 18 million... 5 million years ago with Lemuria, and Atlantis came up after Lemuria sank in the Pacific, the big giant continents, right? So they sank, and then Atlantis came up from the Atlantic areas, what we know as today. So that happened, Atlantis shows up 4 million to 1 million years BC. It then sinks again in a couple of stages, but and that happens around 200,000 BC too. 85,000 BC. So that's the Atlantis we hear about, the one we know.
So the Atlantis that you know is a prehistoric, by a very long time, civilization. It's not within the historic or mythic times, but way, way older.
Yeah, yeah. And according to what we saw, the first of the floods happened around 85,000 BC, 850,000 BC. When you, then there was more floods later on, what happened, but things sank.
You had said that it was peopled by giants. According to mythology, Atlas was the first king of Atlantis, and Atlas was a giant, and the other kings were sons of Poseidon. Poseidon was an Olympian, and the Olympians were of gigantic stature.
Yes.
So this is the Atlantis that you're referring to, the ancient Atlantis, because there seem to have been other civilizations that arose that people are calling Atlantean, but you're talking about the Atlantis of the occultists that goes way back in the history of mankind.
Yeah, because the planet had flipped, so we had a couple of flips that occurred, and that would cause those great flooding effects that occurred back then. And then in between time, we had... 4 million. Whatever, we had some dinosaurs showing up too. You know, but they were so parts of the country, the Earth at that time, and that's why it explains some of those tall walls they find in ancient history. They cannot explain big tall walls to keep some of these critters out.
So there's one in Texas.
Yeah, have you heard of the one in Texas, that giant wall? I forgot the town, but it's...
I think it might be...
How big was it? Miles?
It's a square, and it's a few miles long and wide, and it's about 70 feet high.
Or 75, or...
Wow.
Yeah, right, 70 to 75 feet high.
So who were they keeping out?
And it was deep under... It was underground. They dug it out. And they're trying to say it's a natural formation, but no, because there's stonemasonry. but it would be how many thousands of years did they even say? They estimated it a long time ago.
It was a long time.
We jokingly said it too when we heard about it. It was like, oh, dinosaurs, you know, the big ones walking around. But you know, the Atlantean people and those races were very superior to even today. They had things that we don't have today, and they had flying spaceships and everything like that, because these are the ancients that came from other places, and they could be 100 feet tall or more. And some of them, the stages of time as the Earth had flipped, we're called now the fifth root race, I think. That means we had like four flips. This is the fifth world, as they call it. So we have, as the Earth has moved in its cosmic alliance with the Sun and the other planet system, our solar system, notice the oxygen levels would go decreasing. There was higher oxygen in the planet in the ancient times, and including when dinosaurs were here. There was kind of a humid environment, too, for them. But then... as the oxygen decreases around the planet, so did the animal life forms. They started to shrink and heighten and everything. So gradually the humans that were still here, real humans like we are today, but advanced, were 15 feet, 20 feet tall, and they started going down to 12 feet and going down. That's where those giant skeletons people find, 12 feet, 9 feet, and they're pretty old too. And they've destroyed, as we know, the old ancient skeletons they discovered. They took them out to the ocean and sunk them, those giant skulls and bodies, giant body skeletons. And now they have found, and they also have those giant axes that were found that are huge, that a human can't lift, but a giant can. And it'd have to be a pretty big giant, not just a 10-footer, you know, not 12 feet like Goliath or anybody. So they have a lot of that happening. So what happened, though, was after Atlantis sunk in different stages, you know, it was like shifting in stages to when they just had two islands left. And then when they sank, one of them sank, it left a single island, and that's the island we called Poseidonis, after Poseidon. So that's when then the great floods, the last great flood they had was around 9,564 BC, something like
so
that.
So what happened to Poseidonis, the island of Poseidon?
That island got destroyed in the last of the great floods, around 9,564 B.C. The people were 20 feet tall and 15 feet tall and some 12 feet, and they were gradually to today. We have man has been shrinking down. But the giants were around, the big giants were around 18 million to 5 million B.C., Lemuria as well. So there was a civilization that's extinct, too, that was named the Pahari, something like that, some kind of name like that. So
Hercules, can I ask Mark
human.
A question?
Of course.
Just because he's touching on a subject that I find very interesting. And Mark and Phyllis, if you have any idea here that the Smithsonian, I've read many reports that people have found, as Mark and Phyllis have been saying, huge, huge bones, huge skeletons that are many, many times bigger than what we now know is a typical human body. And these people have said that they have literally brought them to the Smithsonian Institute, never to be seen or heard again. Now, that bothers me a great deal. And my question is, for anyone here, why would they be hiding something like that deliberately? And a lot of people who've brought them things say it's so irritating that they get no explanation. It's just like they never did anything. They never gave them anything when they did. Why would they try to guard that? If anybody has any ideas, I would be very interested.
Well, you know,
we do.
Simply, we believe, oddly enough, that the reason they did it is because the Bible speaks about giants, and in order to disprove that there could be anything historically correct in the Bible, you know, the Christian Bible, they just destroyed any proof they could get their hands on that might, you know, for instance, even the Noah's Ark, which we believe is on top of Mount Ararat in Turkey, many people have rappelled down into it and found places where animals could have stayed, you know, like wood, petrified wood enclosures and things of this nature, and it actually lands up being the correct size as was depicted in the Bible. And nobody wants to agree that, that's a possibility because if the Bible were to be proved in as true history in any particular way, that would create a lot of problems for the powers that be.
Yeah. And just remember when it was made, the Bible.
I can certainly hear what you're saying. And, I think that, Phyllis, you've got that right. I think that's got to be the main reason for this is because they don't want anything to verify.
Think about it.
Yeah, well, that's the people, right? They're trying to destroy things of truth that were ancient, showing our planet to be way older than they try to depict it as, like 6,000 years ago. And it's all stories and mythic, other stories. A lot of the biblical stories are ancient stories of the giants and talking about the people, even the Indian, India, Aryan races and all. They're the ancients, and they're probably really close to what we had back then too, but they were tall people as well. They're just their like sub-root races of the original Aryan or Asian races, et cetera. So like we know from I don't want to say we. I just want to say what I know from where I come from is these ancient races, as Hercules knows what I'm talking about, they're from space. And they have always been going around, these different people, and they're like very tall, huge, you know, 150 feet more tall. Some of them even taller. So they come to different planets sometimes for bases, and they set up bases because our planet's a great planet, as we call it, the resource planet. In this part of the galaxy, it's a big resource planet. And these beings, and space beings, they're human-looking. You wouldn't call them humans, but they're human-looking, and they have human qualities to them, too, and some organs in their bodies, et cetera. So but you would say genetically maybe they're not a total human like we are today, but more advanced anyway. They were super advanced. So they had technology that's not on the planet, technology that was far superior to what we have today even. And they used free energy like Nikola Tesla talked about and spoke of. And Nikola Tesla, he was a space person from another time, visited planet Earth and came back into it to be Nikola Tesla. with his intellect that he brought with him. That was amazing what he knew, what he could tune into and go towards in the cosmic, we'll say the creator's universes. So we had all these people. And, you know, they built things from stone. They used what on the planet. So you'll find stone things or whatever. But if they took anything with them, all they did is dematerialize it. They didn't need to carry a house or a roof anywhere. They could just materialize things with their thought. This is the space people. And that might be what the scientists of Earth don't want to be showing of what's really happened on our planet here, how it's gone through many changes and floods or whatever we call them, mud floods, all kinds of floods. So there's different races and groups of people here that are extinct today. They'd say today that the groups don't exist because they're extinct. Maybe they just left planet, you know, like they like to do, packed up and left. And maybe they took some of the tribes with them in different times too, you know. They just took them on a base that we have out there. So there's different ways of saying the arcs, you know. You have a physical arc like a boat, or we have these other arcs that we use to rescue. And I was part of the rescue teams that we did in Atlantis when it was going to go down for the last time. And at that time, they had scientists that were very powerful, like, whoa, they were negative people too. They got involved with their power and arrogance. And so the beauty that they had before that was amazing. We were helping them with, I'll say the space people we knew, we'll call Venusians today, and people from our solar system.
So basically Aetherian.
Aetherians. We're Aetherians, but we come in, you can form a physical body to work here. And some of the other space people living on the planet too were from planets and other places, highly advanced, and came to do, out, like again, make a resource area or contact colony, in a sense, to be on the planet Earth at the time. So when they're traveling through.
Also alliances, right?
Yes, they had alliances and alliance groups and everything. So the planet has flipped. Things have changed on this Earth a lot of times. And you see, we'll see the remnants as they come up, as time goes, if they're digging and finding like the wall or things like that on the planet, or the giant stones and roadways or trails and things under Florida, around Florida and the Bimini areas of the islands there. I knew Charles Belitz back in 1980. We met him, and he wrote the book on Atlantis. Charles Belitz.
Yes,
way
he
back.
Wrote a really good book on Atlantis. I remember.
I had his home number. I used to talk to him in Florida. When we met, we were on a TV show. And we talked in the back room, you know, before they take you on a day show or something, kind of early morning show on New York. It wasn't Bill Boggs. I was on that show with our investigators, UFO investigators. But it was another daytime show, like Good Morning New York, or something like a show like that. And so they had Charles Blitz and me on. And Charles and I were talking in the back and just discussing Atlantis. And he was fascinated with what I was telling him, similar things I'm telling you. And he says, how do you know this? And I told him, space. Well, he got to believing it because I actually said parts of Atlantis are what's Cuba today and underneath the ocean in the Atlantic, and parts of Florida and areas around that are still above water are still parts of that ancient giant island. We'll call it a giant landmass. It wasn't even an island. It was huge. It was a landmass like Canada. Yeah, right. Like a continent. But pieces, when they sank, pieces all didn't sink at once. And so they come back and they rise up again in different ways and different times. So Cuba was still now remnants of the ancient Atlantis. I'd be surprised if they find stuff underneath their earth there. But down in the ocean, the Bimini Wall and all that is part of that, the structures they had that were for the maritime things that they did. They had ocean-going vessels as well, but they also had space travel. So this is what people don't get, and they don't remember that's what they had. And the ancient India's texts, you know, show the Vimanas and everything, those are scout ships. Those are like today's cars. They wouldn't be that big either. Sometimes it'd be the size of a small airplane, just taking a person or two or three. So the Vimanas are part of the crews and the ships that they had that worked on the ley line frequencies as well as the free energy, and they knew how to harness that. So we had more; they had more than that too. But they were the blue-skinned people that people know as Krishna. They came from another part of our galaxy. Krishna.
Excuse me. Hal Hercules, I want to just go back just for a moment because Mark is identifying something that I find quite interesting. I have a friend, Michael, who has been most of his life researching the Bimini area. He's been down there. He wants to do another expedition. He had a detailed map of the whole Bimini area, and he's been to a number of prominent psychics. And he showed this map. In fact, I have the map with me now. He loaned it to me. It's quite detailed. And he showed the psychic. Oh, I want to. And I want to do that. That's one of the reasons I want to see you guys. Anyhow, so what he did is he showed this to the psychics and said nothing and said, can you tell me anything about the area? And the psychics looked at the whole map, and they pointed... One psychic pointed to a particular area in water a little ways off the coast, and they said, look here. This is an area you need to explore. He went to another psychic, I think a year or two later, and said the same thing to this other major psychic. The psychic looked at this map and pointed to the exact same area. There was no other markings on the map. And said, this is where you need to look. Now, that's interesting that they would, of all the areas of that map, they both went to that particular area. And Michael right now is trying to get funding to do another expedition to that area. This is a very exciting adventure that he is on. And I'm very excited for him. It means a great deal to him to get additional funding to do another expedition in the Bimini area.
Wow.
Fantastic.
That's great. No, the crystal skull, the one with Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Oh, yeah.
Had. And we knew Anna, and we went to visit her up in Kitchener, Ontario, in Canada back in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed overnight at a motel, but there was snow on the ground. It was like 4 feet high or more. And I had a vision of her a week or so before we went. And actually, the story of that whole story is bizarre. The way that we got there through a psychic who is blind, who calls me up one day and says, "Are you Mark Bringerhoff?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "My guide Akhenaten told me to call you."
Whoa!
And I said, "Oh, okay." You know, because I was like, "All right, who are you?" So I find out Akhenaten, her guide, who appears to her. Even though she's blind, diabetic, appeared to her in his regalia and told her to locate Mark Bringerhoff, that he will help you. She's out on Long Island at the time back then. So she starts calling places around Long Island, called the Spiritual Frontiers Fellowship, and found out I had gave a talk there in 1977. So she calls the number they had, which was my parents' house up in Mayapak. So they called. She calls, gets my father. He tells her I'm in New York, gives the next number. So she calls here, gets our answering machine that I picked up. So this is how funny it was for me to hear this story from her. And she says, he says that you'll be able to help me see the crystal skull because you helped to create it. And I said, really? So now I tune up to my crew. Because I've always had a thing for the crystal skull since I was a little kid, since I could see it on TV or I saw it in a book. Whatever I saw, it would talk to me telepathically. So I thought, interesting, she's saying this. So I had an out-of-body and went to go see what's going on. And that's true. I was one of seven space people. We worked on this crystal skull. And the reason I'm saying this is because it was a gift to the Atlanteans from the space people, all of the Alliance crews and all of us up there working on the solar system and galaxy. So we were giving it as a gift because we were coming in with technologies for them to utilize too. This was after one of their sinkings of some of their continent. There was a cataclysm. So we have the giant remnants were sinking. We had some, again, the two islands, but this is just before the two islands were created, before that had happened. So, Nick, you're going to like this. We went out into the ocean, which was still parts of the ocean out there. It was parts of the ocean. So what we call now, today, the Bermuda Triangle.
When you say we, you mean
Earth.
The Earth crew.
Earth calls Bermuda Triangle.
No, but you're saying when you say we went out to...
The crew and I. We went out, different crews. We went out to...
In his etheric body from Venus at the time. He doesn't give you all the details.
Okay, from Venus. So we went out there to the ocean, down into the water. You know, you could do that with your ships. And we went out into an area where we teleported out a chunk of crystals that we knew were inside the caves down in under the ocean, way deep.
Whoa,
and we got a chunk of crystal, and we brought that to the ship, teleported it up, and that's the one we carved from the skull. And I worked on the zygotal bones and the eye sockets with a handheld, I mean, like 9 feet tall, 8 feet tall. So I was holding a handheld object that we call it's like a laser, but it's a light. It works with light, so it doesn't look like a laser beam, but it carves. All you do is aim and move it around, and it reminded me, the best way I sketched it in paper was, it reminded me of a razor. You know how a razor looks in your hand, a handheld, so you hold it, looks like something narrow, like a razor, but it had a smooth edging to it, and I can't imagine anything that looks like it today, but we moved it with a frequency and the light. So we melted it in a way, or disintegrated the crystal, melted it through. And it looks like you're carving in liquid clay. That's what it felt like, carving it. Something smooth like that. But what you got was, at the end result, is a smooth glass-like look that, to this day, they still can't say how it was done. They don't know. They try to say it was polished, but it wasn't. So we put inside of it a spaceship or a flying saucer-looking thing in there. So if you look at it with the lighting in a certain way, you might see the spaceship effect of a little flying saucer with a dome and everything. But that was the scout ships. So I carved around the zygotal bones and the eye sockets, and the others did different parts of the head. And we said it's a female. We're going to make a female type of skull, because skulls are recognized all over the omniverse. Everybody knows what a skull is. No matter what species of being you are, if you see a skull, you know that's a being. That's a physical in some way. So we were bringing that through, and it was made so that the mouth could move, and it could be detached. So there was a reason for that, too, for them, what they did with it, and in a training that they used it for, with balancing it and everything. But it was also a frequency enhancer. It was and there is a being with it, a spiritual being that goes with that, like a nature kingdom of being, and her name is Altea. So that's we carved her. So she was a modern, stylized, futuristic-y, spacey skull. So it's not exactly human-looking if you look at it, but it is, if you have a space being, more of a space being skull, and a feminine one at that. So we utilized that. Then she was imbued with healing properties, all kinds of energy frequencies that would work for harmonics and subharmonic, different things like that to work with all the people of the planet. And it was basically a gift. So when Akhenaten told our friend that, and we have lost touch with her, though, when he told her that, I was at first going, okay, and I was thinking, okay, because I was being blocked from all that, even though I knew the crystal skull was special and I loved it. So I went out of body to go get the Akashic and go into the whole thing and see what happened, and I saw what happened, so now I'm like, okay. So, but I knew that we took that crystal from deep in the ocean. That part that's Bermuda Triangle today that causes a lot of anomalies and things to go wrong with the planet or in the ocean area there is due to Atlantean technology that's sunken down there, and that I've always known, because when it sunk, we saw the stuff go down, and we were like, oh, okay, we can't, it's a giant crystal structures that they have down there. Something with crystals that they utilized, because they worked with a lot of crystal for laser technologies that they used. And they were shooting some ships of ours and others, if they can catch you at the right time before you dematerialized and transferred to the next frequency of dimensional space, they could actually hit your ship. And we had ways to buffer it, but you know what? Sometimes you didn't have it right away, and they hit one of the ships I was on with a friend. But we saw the beam coming for us, and we teleported out. Because we were Aetherians, we just teleport out. You take the body with you, just like, you're out. So they destroy things like that in those times. That's how they became dangerous. So we're seeing today the same souls incarnating back over time with similar, trying to take over things, trying to take over people, trying to do things to people, trying to control and enslave them. And we're seeing it today.
And also misusing direct
and misusing
energy
technology,
weapons,
exactly.
Direct energy weapons, which would be similar.
I would say the direct energy weapon they have today would have been similar to something they created back then, because they just aimed it and at whatever they wanted to, town, city, a ship on the sea. They could just destroy things. And they pulverize stuff with it. So it was a little more intense of an energy weapon than we have today, I think, because our ships are made to be non-destructive with technologies of certain things, right? So they had something that they got that pierced through that frequency when we're transforming. As we were going to teleport to the next frequencies to get out, like shut off and go bleep through, they caught us at the moment we were doing that, and they got us in between the frequency. So that's what took that ship down that we were on. And they were doing that to other ships, other starships, I mean, that were trying to rescue. And originally we were transporters. We would take things and transport things from other planet systems to here as, like, those people living here and the different races that were here or space people that were here at the time needed certain things. So, like, you're transporting, like the Old West, I guess, you know, coming through with a cavalry team or something. But when we were rescuing people, some of them went to other star systems, and a lot came back to the planet. Just a few people took off to the star systems with other beings to have a different life on another planet system and learn something else. But there are a lot of people we took up and we brought back to the planet when time was set okay for them to be back on the Earth again and reestablished with training and farms and things like that. Because a lot of stuff went on when the planet upheavaled a little with the water and the flooding. So souls were taken onto the ships, which we'll call an ark now, because we call them, the big ones are called Arkvanas, but they're not arks as rescue arks, but they can be if they needed to be. So it's funny how this is what goes on, not just on this Earth planet, but on other planets too. When they have upheavals or turns or flips of the planet, you're going to have I'm thinking of people and towns and cities and continents destroyed by the flooding. We'll usually rescue when we can. We always come in to rescue. That's why I tell people, you got to get your consciousness, your energy. Everybody's right on the energy frequency, saying raise your energy to be understood. But they don't know the hidden meaning behind that, which is what we taught in the ancient times. The hidden meaning of the 144,000 from the ancient biblical texts is not 144,000 people. Have you heard of this, Nick and Hercules?
I have, no. And you're raising an interesting question here, Mark, in that the waters of the ocean have been analyzed. They said approximately 6% we know what's underneath the water, and that's it. I was shocked at that low number. And as you know, in the last 40, 50 years, amazing discoveries have been made of just what you're saying, temples, pyramids, staircases, in India, you name it, the countries, China, they're finding, they're beginning to uncover this amazing history under the waters, and we have to rethink everything now. We have to rethink what we thought we knew, because we don't. And so this is just, again, underlining what you're saying, that it's down there, and because of flooding, because of other Earth changes, a lot of it's hidden, and we're just beginning with our technology to discover it.
You know, like the pyramids that are in all over the country and all over the world, are just big mountains to them, but they were ancient structures from ancient, ancient, ancient times. I mean, we're talking millions of years. Millions.
Were they also places that could gather energies?
Yes, especially the pyramids were always made. We've always had pyramids on different planets, on planets to keep the balance going on their polarities and everything to help them with balancing, keeping the planets from flipping. Some of that was caused, they would start that after a lot of this Atlantis stuff happened. They started putting pyramids around because they knew that that helps with the balancing of their planet system. But they're, of course, the way that they've laid them out, just like you read or know today, was from ley line or frequency lines around planets and with the frequency with the planet itself. So it harmonics and everything with that. And the pyramids have been turned off, basically, because they took things away from them on the top points of the pyramids when there was things inside them. They probably took and destroyed that or took it away and hid it. I met a man a long time ago. He might be on the other side now, but 1976, and he was a pilot and everything, and he knew another guy that went to Japan's area, and they went to the underwater pyramid that was there that appeared one day, and people were fishing or something, they saw it, and they went there, and they went down and dove down, and they found an opening, and he went into the opening, and maybe people have heard this story before listening, because this is pretty an old story, but it happened in the 70s from this man that I met. I won't say his name, his last name was Cuddy, but he was friends with this man who did this, and he was fascinated by it, and he had a picture of the ball sphere that was taken out of the pyramid. So the man went in, diving, scuba diving, and they found a big room with giant chairs and a giant table that only giants could sit at, like 12-footers or plus. Giant chairs. In the center of this table, coming down from a ceiling, which was very tall, he said, was a tubular effect with a casing around it that looked like, I think he said, like a glass look. So inside this was a sphere, a ball, looked like a crystal ball of some kind. And there was another thing that was there was red. It might have been a ruby that maybe energy came through to get to that ball, or something like that. It's so long ago. But he took the ball. He was feeling, should I take the ball? Should I not take the ball? And he had an impression to take it. So he felt that there was beings in the room and invisible to him, take the ball. He took it, put it in his pouches. You know, they have those pouches on the sides of their scuba gear. And he took that, and he went out of the thing because he had headlamps on his mask. They went out through the tunnel and back out to the boat that they were on. And,
wow.
Or boat they were in or whatever they were doing. So they find that, okay, they go back with this ancient thing. When you looked at it with the light, a certain way, three pyramids appeared inside of it, like
whoa,
etched inside, you know, like laser cutting and what do we call that? Holographic. So soon after they came back from that whole expedition they were doing with that pyramid, which was very tall and very big. They think it was bigger than any pyramid that we know right now, the Cheops or any of those. So he said it was huge, but it had come up from the ground, underground. So something sunk and something came up. A couple of days or within the week, the thing sunk back down and was not seen at that spot again where they had marked it off on their nautical maps. So it came up and it went down. And this is what the Japanese people, the fishermen, were saying. Sometimes these things come up and sometimes they go down. They could see them from the water looking down and then they're gone the next days later. So when he was told to take that sphere, he took it. I don't know who owns the sphere now. There is somebody that has it. But the man that I was talking to, who was giving a teaching that day at a college, he said, we talked with him, and I talked with him, and he said, yeah, he held it, he saw it. He says it's about a 5-inch diameter, roughly, or so. Maybe I'm doing that, 5.5, 6-inch diameter ball. I don't think it was 6-inch diameter. I think it was a little less. But he said it was, you could hold it in your hand, and you hold it up to a light, and you could see these structures inside of it, and ancient, right? So they must have taken that ruby thing, too, but whatever that was. There might have been something with the frequency, goes through the light of the ruby, and hands us into the crystal that they had, the ball, and became a, let's call it a telloid. That's what the space people call things like that. you have certain things you can use in space when these people are on physical planets. And we could call them a telluride. That means it's something you could touch, hold, or see. And a crystal ball would be similar to that idea. You would hold it and see or see in it, right? But as a telluride, it has, like the crystal skull, the original one, the real one that we talk about, was a gift for the Atlanteans. That was a telluride as well. If you put your hands on it, it could tell you lots of information. So when I met the skull in Canada with Phyllis in 1982, I put my hands on it, and I was alone with her for an hour. And she said, the first thing she said to me was laughing, and she said, "You're the first to come back to me." So I told her, "Well, the others are in space, so I don't know if they're going to be able to come back to you anymore." But she was talking about things. You could talk other languages. So it's amazing if you can ever touch it, but the guy holding the crystal skull now doesn't let us touch it right now. So just think to the skull on a piece of paper or book you see her picture on. You can put your hands on her. She's a telluride.
It's interesting, though, what Anna Hedges said to Mark when the guy that drove the car for us up said to Anna.
He's a policeman, yeah.
He's a policeman. He's a New York City policeman that was dating our friend Joanne. Because Mark had been had the skull in his hands, the
whole skull with the jaw.
The whole skull with the detachable jaw, and he kept walking around with it. And
in my right hand.
Like it was a, you know.
It was weightless to me, and that thing was heavy. But I was walking around with it and putting a Joan's third eye to help her with her eyesight and her healing for her like that. And that guy says,
he says to Anna, do you think he should be treating the skull like that?
$1 million artifact.
Because he knew that it was a very rare artifact. And the Anna said,
she says, I heard him talk to her. I was peripherally on my ear. And I hear him say that. I went, oh, well. And she says, oh, yes. Mark can do anything he wants with it. He's part of it.
Now, this is Anna.
And that was Anna Hedges saying that. And what's funny is the week before when
I should have gotten it in writing.
Well, I talked to her at Christmas. I would call her up and we talked for half hours. And one thing that happened the week and a half before our meeting with her in 1982, I went out of body and went to Canada. And I was there. It was like deja vu for me when we went there with Phyllis and the other people there. But I was with Phyllis and we're going in a car and I could see the house. And I saw the house, the living room, big glass windows for the living room on the left side, and the doorway there, and little windows on the right, and a long path from the yard to the road, or driveway road. So we were looking for this house. So in my vision, or out of body, I'll call it, I'll say lucid out of body Akashic-y thing, because it was seeing the future for me. So I went there, and we knock on the door, ring the doorbell. Anna answers the door, and next to her on her right side was another woman who I didn't know. So Anna answers the door, says, oh, welcome, come on in. She has her hair pulled back, long gray hair, and she has a clip in the back, like those 3.5-4-inch clips that people use to clip their hair back in one long thing. She turns around, I see the clip. She living room's on the left side. There on the coffee table is the crystal skull.
Your dream.
Whoa.
This was my vision, dream, lucid, out of body, whatever, call it. And I thought, oh, interesting. So we walked towards the hall in the kitchen, and I thanked her, and then I stopped and I left. When we physically go see Anna in Canada, we're driving around looking in giant snowbanks, and I said, all we got to do is look for a house that has a living room on the left-hand side. All the houses had living rooms on the right, the big windows. So finally we were in a cul-de-sac, we're going around, and we couldn't see the mailbox numbers because the snow was covering everything. And finally we got to a number that looked like the number on the mailbox, but what I first saw was a big pathway through the snow to the house. And I said, there's the living room on the left. That's the house. So we pulled up and we looked at the mailbox. Sure enough, it was the number, and that was her house. So Phyllis and I go out of the car, go over to the door, just like in my lucid vision out-of-body dream. We knock the door thing, and Anna opens the door, and there's Anna and the lady in my dream, the other one, who I didn't know who she is, but her name is Cynthia now, mm-hmm. And they're all passed on. But Anna opens the door, she invites us in, and there in the living room on the left is a coffee table with the crystal skull sitting on it, which she later takes into a dining area and leaves us alone to be with it later. So we waited for our friends, and that was it. Later, after I played with the skull for an hour, I went into the kitchen with Anna to make tea. Anna had short hair, like clipped to her earlobe area. In my dream, she had hair down towards her shoulder blades, pulled back. So I said to her in the kitchen, I know you know people see you out of body sometimes. You visit them, right? Do you remember seeing me? Because I visited about a week and a half ago, out of body. And she has that. She would see people before they come to her house. She says, you know, I don't remember, but you're very familiar. So I said, well, here's something, Anna. In my out of body, when I came here with Phyllis, I saw Cynthia, but I didn't know who she was. Now I know that's who she is. But in my vision, you turned around to walk towards the living room, and you had long hair pulled back with a goldish clip, a hair clip. And she said, what? I said, yeah, it was long hair pulled back here. And I showed her, and she says, oh, my gosh, when did you have this? I said, it's about a week and a half or so ago at the most. She goes, oh, my gosh, I did wear my hair like that. I did have long hair, and I just cut it like 4 days ago.
Here it goes. Wow.
So while I'm standing there talking to her, I'm going to the kitchen sink to wash my fingertips and stuff, and there on the window ledge of the window, kitchen window, is the clip sitting there. And I said, Anna, that's the clip. She goes, that's the clip I used all the time. Whoa. So she says, you did see me at that time, a week and a half ago. I said, yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's – wow.
I'm sorry I ran off onto all that. But the Akhenaten is a hybrid extraterrestrial at the time when he was here as a Egyptian, let's say, pharaoh king guy. And the time, Atlantis, what I'm talking about, the way back, thousands of years ago, you know, way back, the Egyptian groups, what we know as Egypt, became remnants of the Atlanteans, as well as Algonquin Indians. Everybody listening, blue-eyed Algonquin Indians, they're also remnants of Atlanteans that were in ancient times. They moved as the continents were going down. They got away on ships in different ways. So Egyptians created their society in Egypt based with Atlantean technology, and the pyramids were there already, but they created some of those in Atlantean times. So we have ancient things. And what we know is the Egyptian dynasty about 6,000 years ago, maybe, or more.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ending of the zone, of their magnificence that they had thousands of years before that. We're talking 12,000 years ago or more, B.C. That's remnants. They became the remnants, and they used technology. That's why they had technology like they talk about in the pyramids. They had light. They knew how to work with that. They weren't walking around like they tried to depict us in these old movies. They had technologies, but they had lost some of the grand technology that was here from the space beings. So the remnants that we see of ancient Atlantis, ancient Egypt right now, are the remnants of the final endings of the Egyptian dynasties, like Moses and everything, that timing. They had more thousands of years before. And it's just blows your mind when you think about it because they had stuff. You know the, you know the thing that Pharaoh carried with him, staff he carried. Didn't the Pharaoh always have some kind of little staff he held in his hand?
Frequently.
That was what we today might call a vril rod. It was a frequency rod. That was something he carried because he was in power. He was in charge, and the one in power had that because it was technology. And they could fly things, they could levitate things. You know, this is what people don't understand today. It was like a little
Mark,
small staff, as far as I remember.
Right, right. That in itself is quite a story. Mark, where is the crystal skull now?
It's in Sedona, I think, in Arizona, right, Phil?
That's where he lives.
That's where
is it in a museum, or is it privately owned?
It's privately owned by the man that married Anna. Anna died at 100 years old. Yeah. And she married, she was telling us back then, she was not married. She never married anybody. She didn't have children. But Because she was adopted by Mitchell Hedges. So she told us she's on the lookout for a psychic or someone that can protect and take care of the crystal skull when her time is up, because she couldn't give it to the family because they weren't aware of that. They weren't the kid. She had grandkids. Well, who are those kids? Her nephews?
Probably.
They're like step-nephews or something she had.
Somebody that would respect it.
Yeah, she needed someone to, and she worked with some psychics in Canada. So she told me she's still on the lookout, and she thought, she actually said, if you had the money, and I would love to have it, I told her. But she also had money that went with her inheritance from her father.
Yeah, but the skull would own you.
Yeah, the skull would be alive.
Would,
it really is
yeah.
a strange thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's a happy skull. It's a good skull. It's not a skull of doom. It's a love. It loves. So it really, like Anna told me and Phyllis, this skull wants to be touched, wants to be caressed. It likes the presence. It likes the people. It doesn't want to be locked away in a glass thing in a museum wall somewhere and never seen and touched again. That would be against the way of the crystal skull, because it was
wow.
actually used as that way. So whoever married her, I forgot his name, we met him, and he was very young compared to Anna. He was probably younger than us.
Right? The 40s?
I think he was in his late 40s or something when he married her. But I might be off. But he's in Arizona. He's married. And the thing that Anna told us, that whoever gets the skull should be able to travel with it to give people a chance to get to know it and see it and touch it. And I don't know if he fulfilled that all the way, because last time we saw the skull, we weren't able to touch it.
I think we would have heard about that. It would have to have been covered in various magazines and on the Internet. So I would guess that hasn't happened.
He brought the skull once the last time we saw it.
Yeah, we did see
it. Was on the east side.
In New York.
And we sat at the table with her. He was sitting there behind the skull. And the skull was in front of you about within a foot from you sitting at the table. But you can only look at it. Did he let anybody touch it? I don't remember touching it.
I don't remember touching it.
No.
Which, you know, for us.
I understand, though.
It wasn't a big deal for us because we were manhandling it for hours over with Anna. So we thought, well, we didn't really.
Right, right.
We didn't. I also now, took countless photographs.
Yes, we got
it.
Photos.
I have a lot
too.
Of photographs I took of it in color and black and white.
We have to start wrapping up because we're running out of time for today. Now, you have the EP Universal Zone this Friday. Do you want to continue then, or do you want to wait until the second week in May and continue it on another episode of Mythic Atlantis?
No, I think we want to go in a different direction on the zone, the ET zone.
Yeah, because Nick wants to do something too. Yeah, I'll keep Atlantis to all of us with our theme here.
Okay,
I won't touch
good.
On Atlantis.
And Nick, you have the Disclosure Network this Saturday. Do you know what topic you'll be covering with Robert White?
Right, Robert White. We are Disclosure. This man should get a medal. What he's been doing with every moment he has and with every cent he has is to, himself, producing, directing, and interviewing people, key people in the field of UFO knowledge and experience. And I recommend We Are Disclosure. You can go on YouTube. And I think they've got about 12 of these now wrapped up and out there. And every one of them is worth seeing. So Robert is going to talk about that experience, what's going on now, drawbacks he's had that he's overcome. It's quite a story, and I'm so looking forward to having him as my guest.
Fantastic. Now, Nick, how can people get in contact with you?
Okay, thank you for asking. The website for Disclosure Network New York is very simple. It's www.dnny.info. dnny.info. And that stands for Disclosure Network New York. And you can go on there. You can contact us. And you're also welcome to join our membership. I can email you. And that's the other thing I'd like to give out is my email address, which is NICKNYNY1. And that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, numeral one at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it. NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. Thank you. Thank you, Hercules.
Thank you. And Phyllis and Mark, how can people get in contact with you?
Okay, we have the intergalacticmission.com. You can, all the email on there is the same on all my sites, markbrinkerhoff at yahoo.com. We have etuniversalzone.com, and we have markbrinkerhoff.com as an art website.
And also, Mark has a YouTube website called Mark Brinkerhoff.
And Facebook.
And Facebook. You can always reach him on Facebook.
And I'm available for anybody who needs, we'll call them readings. I call them spiritual consultations, but people call them readings. And I delve into a lot with people. Angels, they're archangels, guardian angels, named archangels, working with them, and oversoul and names and everything and where they come from. If they're interested, anyone can just contact me at the email, markbrinkerhoff at yahoo.com.
M-A-R-C.
I'm like Nick now, markbrinkerhoff at yahoo.com. Whoa.
Thank
you, Hercules.
Love you guys.
Thank you, Nick, too.
We're starting a third series of panels, and this one will be on Atlantis and other lost continents like Lemuria, Mu, Isuvia. There's a lot of lost lands, High Brazil, that vanished underneath the waves or vanished into the mist or under the earth. So we'll be looking at those, and we'll be also exploring the tie-in to what's being called ancient aliens. It used to be called ancient astronauts. So we're going to be exploring that in the very near future. In a month or so, it'll be monthly. So I invite you all three of you, to be on that panel if you so choose. And also to invite you to participate in as many of our UFO entity enigma panels and mythic monster panels, which are currently ongoing.
Oh, mythic monster is my other fave.
And
this is really, Hercules, this is really very, very exciting programming. And we got to say thank you so much for putting this together and being the amazing producer that you are.
Yes.
Thank you so very much. You guys are quite amazing yourselves, and I'm blessed to be working with you. And I'm blessed for our audience who listens in and follows our adventures and contacts me every now and then by email or by Facebook. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you've called and are patiently waiting in our queue while we do our thing, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And Phyllis and Mark, how about if I play your ET Universal Zone music for us to close?
We love it.
Yes, sure.
Ooh.
We love it.
Wow.
We love you. Thank you.
Good night.
God bless.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Love you.